Support for The Front Porch comes from the Charleston Gazette-Mail with their CGM app. Breaking news, traffic, weather, and what's going on here in the Mountain State. Find out more at wvgazettemail.com. And you're on The Front Porch. This week, we're going to talk about the crazy final hours of the legislative session that are going on here in West Virginia. We're going to talk about unlikely allies. And then finally, greyhounds, people with disabilities, and mayonnaise sandwiches. So stick around for that. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I'm joined, as always, by lawyer, columnist, Sherlock fan, and fan of mayonnaise sandwiches, we'll find out later, Lori Lynn. Hey, Lori, how you doing?
Hi, Scott. Good.
And Rick Wilson, American Friends Service Committee goat herder. We're taping this on Friday morning. There are some really interesting and different things happening at the legislature. Unlikely allies. The medical marijuana bill has passed the Senate and the House. It's on its way to the governor, who has said he will sign it. This despite the fact that there were some really powerful people, and especially in the House of Delegates, who didn't seem like they wanted a medical marijuana bill. So, Rick, you've been a legislative watcher for a long time, as have I. This is a really rare thing to have happen on any bill, basically to force the legislature to skip over the committee process and basically vote a bill on the floor. What's going on here?
You know, I'm just thinking it wasn't that long ago. Like Mike Manypenny, who was a delegate from Grafton, you know, was sort of a forerunner on this whole marijuana issue. And it was something that people would joke about. Like everybody, you know, it was like a laugh line until very recently. And even medical marijuana, when it came up, this is something that has just leapt. It's like a qualitative leap in things that have happened.
So this was the kind of thing that got, like, a bill was introduced every year, but it would die in committee and never be brought to the floor. Is that generally what?
Yeah. 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 And, you know, and my question would be, is it the issue or is it a sign of a larger structural change in the legislature? In other words, is this a one-off?
No. This is the thing that surprises me. It's like when Manchin had his public meeting, you know, in South Charleston, people, there's a lot of passionate intensity about medical marijuana around the state, which kind of surprised me. Again, it's not an issue I've really worked on. I'm more a spectator on this, but there's huge interest. And I think probably a lot of people know people who are sick, who have had different conditions that they think this might help with.
I think that this is an issue, as you said, Rick, that is a special issue with lots of passionate supporters. On the other hand, you're just seeing this on other issues, too, where you have the Democrats combining forces with the Freedom Caucus to thwart the will of the more mainstream Republicans. Force pooling is another bill. This is a bill that would make it easier for oil and gas companies to access resources on land that's owned by lots of different people. By basically saying, you know, if you get a percentage of them to go along, the remaining holdouts have to allow you to drill anyway. This is something that we've done now, what, 3 years? There's been bills on this or attempts of bills.
At least.
Yeah. And it looks like it's going to fail again, even though one of the most powerful industries in the state of West Virginia, the oil and gas industry, really wants this thing.
Well, it's one of those really interesting issues where property rights, different kinds of property rights kind of go. And I think there's a sensitive history in West Virginia of people depriving surface owners of, you know, some of their resources, their land, access to it, the quality of it. I think that's one thing that underlies this. And Lori, I'm going to ask you this. Conservatives have long made a thing, as I understand it, about, I kind of agree with it, about not using eminent domain for private purposes. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Kelo decision, the famous Supreme Court decision that said that eminent domain could be used to give people's land to private entities, that's very much hated on the left and the right, I think.
Yeah.
Well, what's your take on force pooling?
To me, it's not a question so much of should we do it, but what are the terms on which we're going to do it? You have to make sure that if you do it, that you do it in a way that is very, very protective. Now, of course, industry is going to want it to be as favorable to industry as possible. And to me, it's that balance. I'm not completely opposed to force pooling, I think, is where I ultimately come out.
In West Virginia, through the generations, sometimes the rights to property get subdivided among heirs and then resubdivided and resubdivided, where there are literally so many heirs you can't even track them all down. So those are some of the issues you're dealing with there. But I want to go back to my theory of there's really not two major forces in the legislature now. There are three. There are the more libertarian Tea Party caucus. It's relatively small, but it's very cohesive. You have the much larger mainstream Republican group, and then you have the Democrats. And anytime you can get two of those groups to work together and make an agreement, then you can get things done. But what we're seeing here with force pooling, with the budget, and with medical marijuana is that the mainstream Republicans all by themselves can't get it done. They need to get either the Tea Party people or the Democrats. And by the way, I think this is exactly what you're seeing in Congress at the federal level too.
Yeah, with the health care bill, definitely.
With the health care bill.
There's no such thing almost as like pure uninhibited property rights. I mean, zoning, for example, infringes on your property, right? You can't just do whatever you want to do with your land.
And we're not big on zoning in West
Virginia. We are not. If there's something deep in the psyche of rural West Virginia.
Absolutely.
It is. Let me do whatever I want to on my piece of land.
Because people have lost their land literally many times in the state due to industrial encroachments. And, you know, someone can say, we have a right-of-way to go across your land to put in a gas pad or, you know, something like that. So it really, there's this history of loss.
You know, your Bible verse, I don't know what it is, but it goes back to what you've used before, where your treasure is, there your heart lies, right? Because in West Virginia, we have extremely low property taxes. We incent owning property. And because of that, even though we're a low income state, we have one of the highest rates of home ownership in the country. So it's not surprising to me that this is a third rail, this force pooling bill.
That does remind me of a Bible verse, by the way, Scott. Since we have a lot of absentee land ownership in West Virginia, I think like early chapters of Isaiah, woe to those who join house to house and field to field until everywhere belongs to them.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's very anti-force pooling, yes.
Yeah. Isaiah's right. Kind of a pinko, you know?
No, but it is interesting to reflect on how much money was spent on lobbying for that. I mean, I hear constantly, even still, they're running on TV, you know, call your representative and, you know, talk about modernizing the law to fit with, right, exactly. Yeah. And then that's what they're talking about. They're talking about the force pooling issue.
Although they won on, you know, water quality. I mean, it's not like the ruling class doesn't rule. They did pretty well on other things this time around.
It seems like it just depends. I mean, environmental quality, it doesn't have the same cachet as property rights in West Virginia. I think that's what that proves. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about some of the hot tempers that are boiling over in the legislature and what that means for the budget and for the future of legislation here in West Virginia. But first, I've been a lot of questions about West Virginia Public Broadcasting's budget and where we are today and where I think we're going to be probably for the next few weeks until a special session. The governor, after having introduced a bill that zeroed our funding out, basically amended that request and put our funding back in at the same level as this year. The House has cut $1 million from our budget and it has asked for $3.6 million. And then the Senate budget zeroed us out entirely. So that's where we stand today. There was an amendment that was offered by Delegate Gearhart on the floor of the House trying to zero us out in the House budget. House Finance Chairman Eric Nelson stood up and this is what he had to say.
I'm not sure if I've received more emails and calls than on this one particular line item. Unbelievable. The public broadcasting is under the Secretary of Ed and Arts, and they provide a very valuable resource. This is where Mountain Stage is, too. You talk about something that is out there promoting the state of West Virginia, this resource right here. This is a very solid entity. I urge rejection of the gentleman's amendment so we can continue the service, Mr. Speaker.
So that's what House Finance Chairman Eric Nelson had to say. The amendment came to a vote. 88 members of the House of Delegates voted to preserve funding for West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and 10 members voted to eliminate it. So that's where that stands right now. Of course, we're just at the beginning, really, of what's going to be the final battle on the budget. And if you want more information on how to protect West Virginia Public Broadcasting, we'd ask that you go to our website, wvpublic.org, and click on the Protect WVPB button at the top of the page. Thanks.
So, Scott, I think I have an idea to save public broadcasting once and for all.
Oh, what's that?
We had a betting pool, possibly administered by the Lottery Commission, about when exactly the budget issue will be resolved in West Virginia. That could be a big one, you know?
That could be a big one. Well, okay, I'll put you on the spot. Give me a date.
Well, presumably bar before June 15th anyway. I'm not a gambler.
You're not a gambler. I'm going to force you to. Okay, I'll put it out there. I think it's going to be June 30th.
June 30th.
I thought it had to be the 15th.
The 11th hour.
To prepare.
I've given you my date. Now you give me yours.
I'm going to go with May 23rd.
I'll go with May 22nd.
Oh, Rick. Rick the gambler.
All right. And just the fact that we're having this conversation is just a sign of just how crazy this year has been as far as figuring out the budget. Of course, they had a tremendously hard job in cutting $500 million and or increasing revenues to some degree to figure this thing out. And tempers are boiling over. Apparently, there was some sort of altercation between the Senate parliamentarian and Senator Unger, right? That was in the paper, at least.
Disagreement, maybe a better.
Having a private conversation, which, of course, you know, was not recorded on the YouTube because the YouTube is like the official recording of the House. And then you hear the Senate parliamentarian start to yell at Senator Unger, yelling, you know, he said when he gets back in control, he's going to fire me. And then Mitch Carmichael called everyone to order, and then they went on. But yeah, it was pretty unusual, certainly.
I covered the Senate for public broadcasting and for the newspaper, and that sort of thing just never, ever happened.
Yeah, when even the Senate parliamentarian, who's like the rule keeper, right? who knows? That it could have just been somebody who was having a bad day. And
People are tired, and there's all this going back and forth, and people are winning them and losing them. And
it is exhausting. I mean, when you see, you know, sessions going into the very late night, certainly I don't know if anything's gone past midnight yet. But exhausting for the people who are covering it, the people who are making the speeches, you know, everybody has to stay and sit there. And certainly, yeah, people are exhausted.
Even think about the health of people. I mean, you know, your routine, your exercise, whatever, just being there all, even the people who are really lobbying on things and staying there the whole time, and the people who work there, this just is a brutal.
It is, and there's so many things that are different about this session.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're starting to see a little bit of the more moderate versus farther right of the party, even in the Senate, not as much as the House, but there is that division. And I think Carmichael is really trying to straddle that line because I think his instincts are more toward the right, but he's the Senate president now, and he just won a very close election. And that's part of, I think, the frustrations. I mean, just imagine, you know, going over to the House if you're Tim Armstead and you're trying to like cobble this coalition together. It's really a thankless job, right? These guys have a thankless job.
I don't know if we're going to get many front porch people to agree with us, but I agree with you in that they don't get paid hardly anything to do this. It is monster hours. You get tons of criticism. The Democrats are making hay that apparently Armstead has turned off his Twitter account.
That was over the marijuana thing, is what I heard.
I'm sure, yeah. I noticed social media was very active on the marijuana front, the almost completely to the pro-marijuana side.
Right now, the House and the Senate are negotiating between their two budgets. Now, the House took a middle road. They did some revenue increases, some cuts, and they came to something. And at one point, the governor and the House seemed to be close to coming to an agreement between those two entities. And then the governor said that they couldn't close the deal. And he held a press conference where he talked about the Senate budget being a nothing burger and the House budget being a mayonnaise sandwich. And in this case, Lori, both of these things are bad, even though I understand that you actually have an affinity for mayonnaise sandwiches.
I'm willing to say this is a very controversial position, but I like mayonnaise. And
that's not controversial to like mayonnaise.
I've been in circles where it's controversial. I think mayonnaise is a condiment that gets less love maybe than some of the others.
Well, Comrade Lennon said you have to break some eggs to make it, I believe.
Yeah,
or
you do. You know what? I make my own mayonnaise. Let me just say, I do not any longer eat mayonnaise sandwiches, but in my teens when I, you know, could kind of eat whatever I wanted with impunity, I don't know if I really did a sandwich, but like an open-faced sandwich, like just a piece of bread with mayonnaise on it.
Did you mayonnaise?
Yeah, sue me. I don't know what
to say. Did your parents have other things in the icebox and you just didn't put it on there?
I just like the
Was
mayonnaise.
It lots of mayonnaise?
No, not a ton, but, you know, I mean, it's like a thin layer.
I was a mustard sandwich kid, by the way, so I was...
I really like all condiments, I have to say. Like, I just pretty much like everything on it. So, but yes, to me, a mayonnaise sandwich is not necessarily the worst thing in the world. Now, I would not have eaten his mayonnaise sandwich because I heard he offered it to people after the press conference, and that's pretty gross. Like, who's going to do that?
You know, we could go over, on and on about some of this, the optics. It's been such a fascinating season, because now you have this new player on the scene, you know, Governor Justice, and he's out there every single day making his case, colorful language.
Yeah, I think that's part of the kind of, he's not a traditional politician. He's not disciplined in his message. I mean, that's the nice way to say it. The other way is that he's just sort of all over the place. I mean, like you kind of alluded to, he was sort of making overtures to the House, and then the next day he like vacillates to, you know, you're a nothing burger.
Let me just say, I love this governor. But anyway, you know, the House, going back to the House budget, I think for a while there, the House Finance had a budget that was pretty close. And I think I want to give a shout out to Chairman Nelson too, for not just for the public broadcasting thing, but I think they arrived at a budget temporarily that might have been a pathway to some kind of deal. So Justice is very interesting to watch, and I've seen him with kids. I've seen him work a crowd, whip out the whiteboard. He's really good at.
So my son, as most of you know, Max, he has autism, and they've had a couple of days where people with disabilities have been up at the Capitol. Of course, one of the things that threat in the Senate budget, and I am not unbiased about this, so I'm going to put that on the table, is what's called the IDD waiver. It's a waiver for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Just really briefly, why does it exist? Back in the day, when a kid had severe autism like my son, or maybe Down syndrome or whatever, you know what happened to them, right?
They would be put somewhere in an institution.
Instead of spending all this money on institutions where kids are warehoused, we're going to instead allow that money to be spent on their care to stay in their own homes. Same amount of money, actually a lot less money. That's the idea behind the waiver program. And it's matched by the federal government. $1 from the state gets about $3 from the federal government. These kids with autism came to the Capitol. Governor had an event. He talked about his nephew who has autism, which I didn't know about. And then afterwards, he sat around for like 20 minutes, like Santa Claus, having the kids come up, sit in his lap, and take pictures. And if you go to our website, you can see a picture of my son with him.
So what did Max think of the governor?
It's crazy. He smiled like correctly. And that never happens. I mean, taking a picture of Max is like trying to get your cat in a good picture.
I was there at a press conference. There were a bunch of kids there. He walked in and said, okay, group hug. You know, that was the first thing.
I got to say, retail politician, you know, that worked for me and my family.
Yeah, look, I mean, it obviously worked for him. And the guy won a decisive victory in a very, very strong Republican year. I mean, on paper, he should have lost that election, you know, decisively. And it went the other way. And I think, you know, we talked about it before. It's his personality. It's the sense that, you know, he's one of us, despite the fact that he's the richest guy in the state. But yeah, you know, he does that very well. And I'm not saying it's insincere. I think he's actually very sincere. I think he's actually not able to be insincere, but that's one of the skills that you need in politics. I think he's saying what's on his mind at a particular moment. If I worked on his staff, for example, you know, his communications person, I would be having a conniption fit because he makes it hard for the office of the governor to kind of push out a consistent message when he goes out and kind of rambles.
Let me ask about this one last thing. If you are someone that wants to cut the size of government, supposedly something that should have been quote unquote easy to do, according to conventional wisdom, was eliminating the amount of money we spend subsidizing greyhound racing in the state, and also eliminating the money sent back to the casinos so they can upgrade their facilities, the modernization fund, they call that. Both of them were on the chopping block. The Greyhound bill passed the House and the Senate, although it wasn't easy. It's close. And now it appears the governor's going to have some sort of press conference about that up in Wheeling, where there's a racetrack. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, it sounds like most people who are in the know think he's going to announce that he will veto the bill.
And then I think the modernization money is still in the budget, and it's supposedly going to stay there. the last I heard, that was supposed to be the first thing that could go, and even that doesn't go. What do you make of that, Rick?
It's a regional issue, I think, more than an ideological one. I think if you're in a part of the state where you have the racing and stuff, and it's the kind of thing when you hear about, yeah, let's get rid of it, and then if you're near it and you see it has an employment effect and things like that, that's why I think it's one of those issues where you have interesting allies.
The true fiscal conservatives are saying the Greyhound racing, it's almost completely state subsidized. It is something that would not exist at all were it not for a state subsidy.
Yeah, I mean, we paid money several years ago, I think 2015, to have a study done. An outside group came in and, you know, went through and audited it essentially and said, look, the money from these purses are going out of state. It's, I think, a consideration that it's not very good for these dogs. And I mean, you know, you can
only six states that I think still do it.
Yeah, that either matters to you or it doesn't. But if you're a dog lover, it's pretty I think it's pretty unconscionable. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you talk about creating winners and losers. You know, this picks some people to be big time winners who would not be in business if, I mean, to me, I think it's a no-brainer. And I think if he does veto this, there's enough kind of anger about it. I suspect they will come back again, not this time because there's not enough time left in the session to override a veto, but I think they might come back and try to do it next year.
Okay. I would not face a firing squad on this issue either way.
And probably. I'm surprised, frankly. I mean, he Justice mentioned it in his speech to the legislature, right? You know, right after he was inaugurated. So he said something about, you know, we don't want to cut our Greyhound breeders program, which I thought it was kind of odd that he, you know, was cared so much that he would single that out as I want to protect this. So I guess, you know, he is being consistent in that.
Well, we shall see what happens. If you're listening to this before Saturday night, make sure you check out our live coverage of the final night of the legislature. It could be a real barn burner. And at the very least, you're going to see a lot of interesting interviews with lawmakers, policymakers, lobbyists, and others at the Capitol. Our live coverage starts at 8 o'clock on West Virginia Public Broadcasting's main PBS channel and on the West Virginia channel and online. So check it out there. All right. Hey, one last thing. We're going live, folks. We're doing a live show on an actual front porch. Alex and Leah Messia, Virginia Street here in Charleston, have offered up their beautiful front porch for a live front porch event. It is going to be on April 26th, starting at 6 o'clock. There will be a live taping. Rick, Lori, and I will do a show from the front porch. I'm not sure how it will sound, but we'll give it a shot. And we'll also be involving the audience in interesting ways and taking questions from the people that show up. I don't have a lot of information about this right now, but I just want to give you a heads up. Mark your calendars for April the 26th, Wednesday, 6 o'clock, the front porch event.
Will there be rocking chairs?
Oh, good question. Yeah, we'll have to try to get some chairs.
Swing.
What's this about a front porch swingers club, Scott?
this is me.
Cut.
I have been told, my wife has warned us not to talk anymore about that club. Where it's just done.
This porch swing, so get your mind out of the gutter, West Virginia.
What happens on the front porch stays on the front porch.
And that's the front porch. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, joined by Lori Lynn and Rick Wilson. Thanks for listening.